Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Hey, Martin. Hello?
All right, folks, call's going to begin here in just a moment. All right, folks, call's about to begin. And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another nightly call here at Your Remedies in the Law. What's our topic for this evening, Mr. Edward?
Yes, the topic for this evening is Mr. Slevin's LLC.
Mr. Slevin's LLC.
Limited Liability Company.
Yep, absolutely. All right, and of course, my name is Martin Michelson. I'll be your moderator for this evening's conference call, brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you're on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. But we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everybody in no uncertain terms that anybody looking for legal advice has no place or business here on any of these calls. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, nobody here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes, just people saying what they might do, where they're similarly situated, and nothing more than that. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions. However, education experiences, these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just bad opinions. It's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. Let's go over a few things with Your Remedies in the Law very quickly. First of all, I'll take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com. If we look in the upper right-hand corner, we'll see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that. You have two items come up. On the left is the jurisdictionary course. It's a 24-hour crash course in the Rules of Civil Procedure, also known as American Jurisprudence or AMJUR. It's essentially the foundation upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of that means to at least have a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. The side on the right is the common law default process, known for its high win rates and traffic cases throughout the country. Of course, that's what it's most popularly sold for, but that's really not why it's here. The reason that it's here is because it acts as a good homework assignment, basically, to the jurisdictionary course. A lot of folks, this is their first time, you know, committing to any kind of action, so folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because it's a high success rate, and then, you know, traffic being a lesser evil there. The common law default process has many other, you know, remedy applications for whatever scenario that you might you find yourself in. But as long as there's no damage to property or person, then they don't stand. It's just some government official claiming basically that you broke a rule and therefore you have to pay a civil penalty. Also, on the subject of your remedies in the law, you're probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of your remedies in the law, you're met with the blue box that pops up asking if you want to continue on or stay. We encourage you at your convenience to take a moment and stay, see what all is held there. We encourage you to check out Grassfire Communications, formerly known as Statewide Communications. Also, if you're not a member of that, please do sign up, tell your friends, tell your family about it. That's the map of the United States that you see there. It's a private communications platform that basically puts you in contact with people in your local area based on similar interests that you have. And so when you fill out the information there, all your information, at one point it's going to ask you what your interests are, whether it's, traffic or, family or credit cards, home foreclosure, whatever the situation might be, all things civil, of course. And it's going to put you in contact there when it's done with everybody that's whatever the radius that you picked that has a similar interest to you. So we encourage you to do that as well. All right. Finally here, I'd like to go over one last thing. This is your caveat emptor or your buyer beware. When you come aboard at your remedy is in the law and you go with an information provider, you're doing just that. You're going directly with that information provider. Of course, on the subject of refunds, the refund policy, there is no refund policy. Any refund scenario would be a private matter between you and the information provider. But even then, that's extenuating circumstances. As we always say, you're expected to have done your due diligence before you come aboard with any information provider. All right. Freedoms Radio, if you're over the road or you don't want to deal with maybe the card, the credit card process, you needed something quickly there, we have freedomsradio.com. All of these programs are broadcasted for free over that, and we have a spot where you can type in your questions or your comments, and that will load on our side. We'll read those out over the show. So you always have to, you always have the option there, or you don't have to miss a call if you don't want to. All right. Lastly, we want to remind you that all of our information providers here at these calls are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that an information provider has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but you must always be civil. All right, that is my ramble for this evening. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and pass it over here to Mr. Edward to introduce our speaker for this evening and the topic.
Excellent. Thank you, Martin. We appreciate you. This evening, ladies and gentlemen, we are discussing the limited liability companies that Mr. Slevin organizes in such a unique way that it has anonymity and it has the ability to minimize your tax footprint. It works whether you are an employee that now becomes a worker for this LLC and your company that you work for is hiring the LLC as opposed to hiring you, or if you're an entrepreneur, it's the better way to arrange your affairs in such a way as to have a minimal tax footprint. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn this call over to Mr. Slevin.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's nice to be with you. So I'd like to start out with the United States Code, Title 26, which is also known as Internal Revenue Code. In Chapter 1, which is labeled Normal Taxes, get that right, and surtaxes, Section 701 says, quote, a partnership as such shall not be subject to the income tax imposed by this chapter, period. Persons carrying on business as partners shall be liable for the income tax only in their separate or individual capacities. So now the rules of construction that govern this junk that they write says when a word or phrase are defined as a term, only the definition can be used when reading or applying that statute. Well, that little term partnership up there is defined down in 7701 of the IRC. It says in part, a term partnership includes an unincorporated organization. Well, we want to know about those, right? Because anything that is not subject to the income tax, that should be what you want to be focusing on. So the other little one that catches us in 7701 is persons carrying on business as partners shall be liable for the income tax. Well, okay. So what is persons? That's 7701A. One says the term person shall be construed to mean and include an individual, a trust, a state, partnership, association, company, or corporation. Well, all of those, another rule of construction is if one piece of the definition seems to be out of line, it must be not construed to be out of line. So when you have a trust, a state, partnership, association, company, corporation, those are all forms of business. So the word individual must therefore be the same kind of thing, some form of business, because only persons carrying on business shall be liable for the income tax. So they have to be carrying on business in a certain way, right? Well, let's pop back to that partnership, and a partnership which includes an unincorporated organization. Well, gee, what would that be? Long story short, an unincorporated organization is a limited liability company, because when you go to the Secretary of State of one of the several states and you get a limited liability company, the Secretary issues a certificate of organization. So a partnership is an unincorporated organization, otherwise known as a limited liability corporation, which happens that those happen to be a combination of partnerships and corporations, which have been around for millennia and were first legislated in 1977. So how can we use this to empower ourselves to keep all that we earn? Well, our company has figured this out. And so the first thing, once a client gets in with our company and we decide upon a name for their limited liability corporate company, and I almost did that again. You know, a lot of people go limited liability corporation. It's not. It is two separate things. It is a limited liability company, not incorporated. So back to our explanation. Our company agrees with a client upon a name for this LLC, and then we go over to New Mexico. And I'm sure you'll ask, well, why New Mexico? Well, I'm fixing to tell you. So when one of our personnel goes to the Secretary of State of New Mexico, and he fills out what's called the Articles of Organization, which is the application to have a limited liability company organized, it requires a minimum of two parties. Those parties' titles are organizer and registered agent, both of which can be other LLCs. Quick thought on that, you can understand how this, according to the New Mexico legislation and legislators, that they allow to have your two LLCs owning another LLC, owning another LLC, and so forth and so on. What this does is build a set of bulwarks. Nobody's name is on there except the signer as the registered agent of the LLC, but they are an insignificant. By the way, registered agent's only job is to receive process. So in the event the limited liability company was sued, then the plaintiff through the court would get the suit against the limited liability company. They would then look up the registered agent, go to that person, and serve them. Now, if that registered agent is a limited liability company, then they have to find out who is the registered agent for that one and go, and if they find it, that's another limited liability company, then they, you can see how this works. And since lawyers don't really like to work hard, and if they have to work hard, they charge the people that are trying to sue the limited liability company more, this puts your apple way up at the top of the tree in the litigious society in which we live. So once all this is filled out, and the organizer, if nothing else is formed by the LLC, the organizer is considered the owner of the newly formed limited liability company. And that's the way we keep it. So this bulwark of limited liability company owning and so forth, it remains intact as far as our company is concerned. So now you have other states out there that form LLCs, in fact, all 49 of them in the District of Columbia. Delaware and Nevada are usually touted as some of the best, and possibly Wyoming, but these all require people's names on their nominee list. And so they protect the list, but the list still exists. In New Mexico, there is no list. It does not exist, and that which does not exist cannot be found. So New Mexico provides us, the secretary provides us with a certificate of organization for this new company. And then one of our workers who has never filed a 1040 U.S. individual income tax return, which is a good thing, and this is why, because the federal judiciary is under the full conviction that anyone, pardon the pun, that anyone who files a 1040 and signs it and seals it to, sends it to the IRS is accepting the liability for the income tax for life. That is neither moral, legal, lawful, nor constitutional, but that's the way they do it because they get paid really well to do it. And that's for another time. So this individual goes and he fills out the application to get a employer identification number, or EIN, for the new company. Now, EIN is a form of the tax identification number. Another form of tax identification number is something you all know well, the Social Security number. So when this person goes to the IRS website and it says, why is the LLC requesting an EIN? And it says, choose one. Well, the one we always choose is the third one down the line. It says banking purposes. And the subheader says, select this option if the reason for applying for the EIN is strictly to satisfy banking requirements or local law. Did you hear anything about taxation? Nope, because Section 701 can be read as the LLC, as such, shall not be subject to the income tax imposed in this here chapter. Yes, sir, like it. So upon receiving the EIN from the IRS, and don't you love all these acronyms, upon receiving the EIN from the IRS, that individual that applied is known as the sole member of this new company. And the sole member holds a meeting of the members of the company because the owners of a limited liability company are known as members, and they own via percentages of membership. In this meeting of the 100% member, that they hold a meeting and they commission a third party as a manager of the LLC. And this commission is also known as a letter of authority. It's also known as a resolution of authority. Now, manager, like members own it, well, managers run it, and it is the only officer of an LLC. Corporations have president, CEO, directors, and so forth. And partners have limited partners and general partners, but in an LLC world, manager is it, only officer. Now, you can put as many things in front of that as you want, but it doesn't matter. And there are no limit to the managers in the company. So this said manager then takes his commission, the certificate of organization, and the EIN paperwork down to a local bank and gets the new company a checking account. And this comes with a debit card. And, oh, the debit card doesn't have a person's name on it. And it only has the title, manager, and the company name on it. And then it has electronic banking and all the bells and whistles of modern banking today. The manager then brings all the stuff back to the office, and we fired up a pay-as-you-go cell phone. Actually, we're actually firing this pay-as-you-go cell phone up so that he can put it on the bank, or the manager can put it on the banking paperwork. But this cell phone has the electronic banking programmed into it, the Square app, and Cash App. Square is a point of sale, and once that's got all the numbers and names in it, it can then take debit cards and credit cards that go into the company coffers. And then Cash App is a peer-to-peer transfer usually. However, both of these apps have been expanded, and so that you can now get checking accounts with debit cards under both of the apps. So once that's all filled out, the new company has its brick-and-mortar bank, Square App, and Cash App, three checking accounts and or savings accounts, and three debit cards all going into the same place. Really nice setup. So once we put that all together and we ship it to the client, and that client can then open up that box. It's also known as a business in a box. And it can be, and they are now equipped to carry on business worldwide and income tax free because not subject to the income tax. Now they can, this can be used in several ways. As it comes out of the box, and this is the base model, as it comes out of the box, it is a small business. It's less than 500 people in it, and it can commence to sell widgets or carry or services or convey telegraph signals across the world, whatever it wants to do, to get and can get paid in debit card, credit card, check, because you can now use that cell phone that we hand off to you to copy the checks with the smartphone. So you can take a picture of the check and it goes in the company coffers. And then so you're set up. You can run it. And you can run it as fast and as far as you want to. It is literally unlimited. There are huge enterprises which are limited liability companies. One comes to mind is called Dalmer Chrysler. Of course, Dalmer was the name of the man who first made a commercially viable gasoline engine. So that's a small business. Now, it can be grown, and you can have more than one of them. One complex example would be a dentist office. So the dentist is practicing dentistry, so he has a practice. And as part of that practice, he has the equipment in the room, the drills, the seats, the whatever. And then he has the building in which the practice is housed. And then he has the employees, but we don't want to ever use that. We always want to use the word workers or performers, because employee is a defined section back in 7701. And if you want to go look at it, it always turns out to be a full-time life insurance salesman. All of you people out there thought you were real employees. Not defined in the Internal Revenue Code. So the dentist is practicing, and he's got his malpractice insurance for his personal stuff. And then you have an LLC that actually owns the practice, and the dentist works for it. And then all the equipment is owned by another LLC, and that rents it to the practice. The building is owned by a third LLC, and that rents it to the practice. And then the people, the front staff and the hygienist and so forth, they work for a third LLC, and they are renting or renting their services to the practice. So if somebody comes up and wants to sue the practice, and they do succeed in getting a judgment against the practice, then the doctor is protected by the malpractice insurance, the and the since it's against the practice and that LLC, it can't get the equipment or the building or any of the thing having to do with the workers in the practice because they're all under totally different titles or entitlements. And so that's a quick and dirty setup of complex, right? Another thing, back in the small business, for all you W-2 people out there, you are now in an employer-employee relationship and or contract, and that can be verbal or written. And so what you do is you go to the boss and you say, hey, boss, how would you like to drop your labor cost by 25%, get the same great service, same time, same place, same channel? Well, any business owner would love to drop his labor cost by 25%. And how do we figure this? It's called the burden rate. Now, without going into a long discussion, the burden rate is the bottom line cost to a business for the employee. And it's usually about 1.5 to 1.6 times the salary. So we're going to use the example of Joe working for IBM. Now, Joe's been with IBM a while. He does a really good job. They pay him $100,000 a year. Well, he learns how to work with this limited liability company. And we call it our private firm. That's our product name for this thing. Because the private firm, according to Supreme Court, is not subject to the income tax. So Joe goes to his boss and goes, hey, boss, how would you like to drop your labor cost by 25%? And the boss goes, tell me more. And he said, well, I know because of the burden rate that, you're paying me $100,000 and it's costing IBM $160,000 for my services. So what I'd like to do to take me out of the equation, and we'll put in this new company, it's an LLC. And so IBM will contract with the LLC for my services. So it's the same guy, same great service, everything is the same, except instead of paying me $100,000 and doing all the paperwork you got to do and this, that, and the other, so then you'll just cut one check to the new LLC for $10,000 every month, which is $120,000 over the year, and you only have to fill out one piece of paper. That's a 1099, and it'll have the LLC's name and numbers on it, and send that to the LLC. LLC will take care of any and all taxes that are due. It'll take care of everything, and that satisfies your paperwork with, or IBM's paperwork with the Internal Revenue Code, Internal Revenue Service, and then your cost goes from $160,000 to $120,000 a year, and I think that's about 25%. What do you think? And like I said, I haven't said it yet, but this is the way it is. All business is negotiation. And all business is contract. And all contract is negotiation. And so whatever you can negotiate, you can get. This particular thing we have been able to do, and we have that service as part of our hotline services. Our product costs $7,500. And then we have the hotline services, which is by subscription. It's $500 a year thereafter. First year's free. And but it is an optional subscription. You do not have to pay that. However, if you don't pay it and then you call in and have to have something done with the business or some kind of integration phase, then it will be $500 an hour, first hour up front. So back to our other explanation here, we have estate planning. So if you've got an estate, and let's say it's a house, a car, and a boat, and you've got beneficiaries, which are typically your children, and you say, okay, well, this will cost my kids $100,000 if I pass away, and then they got to go through probate and all that other stuff. So you retitle the house, the car, and the boat into the limited liability company's name, and then make each of the beneficiaries a manager by resolution, as we described earlier. And then upon your incapacitation at whatever level, they just open the drawer, pull out their commissions as management and the instructions that you wanted them to have to run the business as you, when you leave, and they continue on, no probate, no estate tax, no nothing, and they don't have to tell anybody. So that's some really quick and useful things that our private firm is capable of doing, and it's literally unlimited. We produce this thing, and once you're set up, we like to call it a starship, because how fast and how far it goes is entirely up to you. What are your questions?
All right, star two on your keypad, folks, if you have a question. Star two to raise your hand. If you're on the Freedoms Radio side, type your question in the box there. Please don't forget to click submit so we can see that on our end. We can read that out.
We don't have raised hands. We're going to go home early, and Mr. Slevin's going to pout.
No, I'm going to go to sleep.
It's been a long freaking day.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, star two on your keypad, folks, if you have a question. I'm not seeing anything pop up here.
Guess everybody's discouraged because the Eagles lost.
Could be. Well, I tell you what, I'm going to just bring up Ron from Coco. Yep, I unmuted you, Ron. Hold on.
Ron.
Yes, hello. Back.
Yeah, there you are. Go ahead, Ron.
Wakey, wakey. I brought you up because we thought you would like to ask some questions or talk about the LLC and how it could have application to your brother or your efforts.
Well, in a farming situation, the LLC would be the manager, and it would lease or rent the land from various LLCs or corporate souls, is that correct?
Well, in a farming situation, you have, again, the parts of the business, which is the land, and then you have the tractors, and then you have the supplies and whatever, and then you have the animals. Those are usually the main components of farming, correct?
Basically, yes.
Okay, so the farm is taxed upon its income, typically. All right, so you would have the land under one limited liability company. Then you would have the farming operations, in other words, the people that work on it, under a second one. The land from the land would be rented to the operations LLC. The animals would be owned by a third LLC, and then the equipment would be owned by a fourth LLC. All right. So this way, if the over the umbrella, or known as the organizational LLC, were ever sued, because it's the only one with a public face, because it's actually got people doing things under its umbrella. And it got a thing, then all they could get would be basically the checking account. And of course, you know, having insurance to mitigate risk is always a good idea. And the bigger the risk, the more mitigation you'd like to have. So that is the general setup, and that's compared to what I just talked about the dentist. So that would be the way that those four LLCs would interlock. And then, so the land would be rented to the organization. Operations. The equipment, the tractors and plows and so forth, would be rented to the operations. And then the animal, the stock, would be rented, rented is not the right word, but it's close enough, to the operations LLC. So all the public face would simply be the operations LLC and all these ancillary LLCs out there. and here again, it's mitigated risk. So does that kind of answer your question as how a farm would work under this structure?
To a point, how would the rain in the field or the grain in the bin be handled?
Well, that's long. Okay, so the operations LLC would purchase the grain, and then it would use the land and the equipment to put it in, and then it would produce a crop, and that crop would be sold under the auspices of or under the umbrella of the operations LLC. All right. So that's the chain of events. And then the cash received for the crop would be then, it would come into the bank accounts of the operations LLC. And then it would be expensed to the various other LLCs that it rents from and any other thing like, you know, the guy that provides the fuel or the guy that provides the fertilizer or whatever. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you. Now,
what else?
I'm retired, and I'm going to be hopefully receiving full disability from the service, from the military, due to diabetic and age requirement, or whatever you want to call it. I cannot work. I cannot get a job. So under that.
You cannot, or the government says you shall not? Because you sound like a wild human being.
If I want to receive full disability, I cannot get a job.
Okay, great. All right, so you go ahead and get full disability. I happen to receive military disability as well. I used to be a paratrooper in a former life. So, yeah, you get it. Now, how would the government learn that you had a job? Well, I'll just answer my own question, and that would be through a W-2 or a 1099 or 1098 or some other things. But anyway, so in the organization that we just talked about, nothing with your name and numbers gets reported to the IRS, even though you are benefiting from employment, to use an improper word. See, that that's called third-party reporting, because the IRS thinks that they're the first party, the taxpayer is the second party, and anybody who hands the money to the taxpayer is the third party. And third parties are scared and chastised that they will file these things like W-2s and 1099s, 1098s, K-1s, rather, all this other stuff, okay? But if that never happens, then the IRS, a.k.a. the government, has no idea that you are benefiting from working. And so you can receive those benefits from that work and your disability and be very happy about it. How does that sound?
That sounds wonderful.
Hey, I
you
like
got
it.
A job I can have?
Yeah, yeah. And it just works.
Well, paying job now.
Say again?
I say a well-paying job, not just chump change here.
Right, yeah. It's all what you want to make about it. Like I said, it's like a starship. You can get in it and go just as fast and as far as you want to go.
Okay, well, I've complicated life as much as I can at this time.
Okay.
But very good information, and I do appreciate that.
You're very welcome.
Star 2 on your keypad, folks, if you have a question, or type it in on the Freedoms Radio side, or we're going to go ahead and wrap it up for the evening. There's nothing. Nobody seems to be popping up, Mr. Edward.
And so I think
going once.
Mr. Slevin, do you have any closing comments you'd like to make?
Folks, just have a bodacious day.
Yeah. My comment to close with is that this is the ideal vehicle to operate through anyone who is either an employee or is an entrepreneur doing business, because this is a turnkey setup. You don't file anything. You don't do anything. You respond and supply answers to a form that Mr. Slevin will provide you with to fill out. And once that's been filled out, and you, there's a verbal check to make sure that what you've put in, what he's put in, is you're all on the same page with it, then his team goes to work. And about how long does it take for the package to be prepared and ready to deliver, Mr. Slevin?
We say on our application to purchase, we say 6 weeks. However, because and there's certain parts of the things like the checks arriving in the mail, and
right.
So we can't. But they're right this time of year. They're running right about 3 weeks.
Okay.
That's the average right now.
So on the outside, 1 to 2 months at the worst. Worst case.
Yeah, scenario. Two months would be an extraordinary situation.
Correct. I just want to give the worst and the best.
Absolutely.
Martin, I just noticed that Ron has raised his hand again.
Yeah, you're
unmuted, Ron.
Yes, Michael.
Yeah.
Have you received any information on my correction status?
No, I don't recall. I'd have to go through my records to make certain. How long ago was that?
I sent you the information over Christmas.
Oh, heck, that's all. Yeah, that's done. That's seasoned. Yeah, let's go ahead and set your appointment.
All right.
Call me tomorrow and we'll get your appointment set.
All righty. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Well, thank you all, ladies and gentlemen. Martin, you want to close us out?
Yep. Join us again tomorrow night. Let's see here. Go to the, we, of course, folks can follow along with me as well. You can always go to the Freedoms Radio and check out the calendar there, and it will let you know what the next call is.
That
or you can
Glenn
just tell us.
Roberts. That'll be Glenn Roberts, and it's a recording, and he will be talking about home foreclosure remedies. So it's a good thing to listen to, home foreclosure remedies. And that'll be tomorrow night. It's a recording, and it's just to get your juices flowing. If that's something that you need to be dealing with, the team right now is closing out on three home foreclosures that they've been working on for literally a year and a half or longer, 2.5 years with some of them. And all three are closing out to the satisfaction of the homeowner within this next week to 10 days. In fact, one of the parties received a check for $1.3 million from the United States government because they qualified for a program. They qualified for a program because they had their, what was in foreclosure wasn't their home, it was their ranch. And but as a rancher, they qualified for some sort of a program out of the United States government. We got that processed, and the check arrived about 2 weeks ago, $1.3 million. Not bad.
Paid off the LLC. Now, if they had an LLC to put it in, it'd be great.
Yeah, really? All right. Well, Martin, close us out then. Thank you.
All right. We'll see everybody back here again tomorrow night. Until then, have a good evening and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.